Back with you live for another incredible Tech Watch Radio edition brought to you by NetworkProvidersInc.com. We are NPI Tech Guys, NPITechGuys.com. Jay Harrison's with me on the broadcast today. Hello, sir.
Howdy, Sam. How are you?
I'm ready to go with all kinds of incredible tech, sir, as always. Story number one today, Microsoft makes a push into smaller AI systems. Karen Wise and Ken Metz with the piece on this one. And they say the company that has invested in billions of dollars in generative AI, pioneers, et cetera, say that big open AI systems, giant systems, aren't necessarily what everyone needs. Yeah. In the big range, they always thought bigger was better. The price tag, no matter. It'll pay itself back on the back end. But we're starting to find out that, you know what, that's not true. We're starting to find out that smaller technologies can be just as powerful and in many ways even more powerful, Jay.
That's true. I've actually seen recently a cool idea that I'll tell you at the end of this story, but it involves a small AI system.
All right, because the interesting thing here is they're saying, look, if you build a smaller system, you can run it locally. You can tailor the AI to your own purposes or needs. Let's just say, for example, we developed the TechWatch Radio AI system, a small one. You know, you could grab all the tech AI stuff and put it into your system, and relatively it's a small system because it's a very unique niche. Even though there's a lot of tech data, a lot of data is not that big of a deal as long as it's in a small, very controlled system. And so you could take these niche fields and use much smaller systems. They're saying they're faster, they're cheaper, and overall, in time, they're smarter, Jay. I find that fascinating.
It is. And these large language models, they don't have to be, you know, libraries and libraries of Congress as their training data. So you can have, for example, in this thing that I saw recently, somebody took a Raspberry Pi, built it into a Pelican case that closes up. And what they have in there is all of Wikipedia and a bunch of other stuff. And it's supposed to be, and it has a... an LLM, an AI that runs on the Raspberry Pi, so it's not super fast, just runs from the command line is all. You ask it questions, you can talk to it, and it will give you answers. And it's made to be, it's sort of like a prepper thing, but it's made to be where it can answer questions on anything. You have health questions, you have medicine questions, you have planting questions, questions about history, politics, astronomy, anything you want, because it has all of Wikipedia built into it and built into its training data. It can just answer these questions. I mean, yes, you can always download Wikipedia, all of it, and put it on an offline server kind of thing. And I've seen these before, but not one where you can access it through a very small AI like this, because otherwise you just have to read article after article if you were trying to get your arms around something, whereas this parses through the data and allows you to ask questions interactively with it, which is a pretty neat system.
It's incredible. And they say because the smaller models require less processing, big tech can charge customers a lot less to use them, Jay. That's big.
Yeah, or not charge them at all. I mean, in this instance, or the ones where you can run them locally on your own computer or your own data set or your own photos or whatever. I mean, I think it's pretty cool that people will have access to this for their own needs and their own uses. It doesn't have to be a huge, you know, GPT-4 sort of model.
Now, for example, let's just say you're a doctor. You could have a small AI system built into your practice. If you're, let's say, a neck surgeon, you know, that's a very specialized thing, Jay. So it could be even relatively powerful, even though it's a small system with not a lot of processing power, because of the way they've, you know, set up the data in the system and the way they ask, you know, consistent routine questions. If you can learn to ask questions in a pattern that's easy to understand, in other words, you can kind of learn the language of question asking for the systems, which doctors can. They can be trained and taught to, and then you can pull out of the system. You could run these doctor systems, or if you're a knee surgeon or whatever, you know, and you can add news periodicals and updates from medical journals and all this kind of stuff into the system. You can get a ton of answers with not as much data as you would think, Jay.
I agree. And I think it can work in the other direction as well for customers. I kind of look at it like a frequently asked questions on steroids. If you have a system that knows a lot about your business or all the other questions that people have asked, I mean, people see frequently asked questions and they're helpful, especially if you can search them well. But what if you just had an AI that was customer facing that could interact with all your FAQs? And so the customer could literally ask the question that they really want to know, you know, how many watts is your, you know, this device or whatever the question is. And it already knows or has all that data and it could just parse through because nobody really wants to read all that stuff to try to dig through it. The AI will speed that up and it could be local and small just for your company or your product or whatever. I think could be very helpful.
And now you're getting to the quintessential point where they're kind of saying, listen, if I have 1,000,000 pages, Jay, of data, or let's just say I have 100,000 pages of data, one is 90% smaller than the other. However, in that 100,000 pages of data, can I get 80% of the questions that are asked? Whereas those extra 900,000 pages might only answer 20% of the questions that people need.
Yeah.
In other words, how smart, how much data do you have to bring to the table to be useful and accurate and valuable? And it almost seems like if you restrict the data set, it can become accurate much quicker. Because if I find an error, it's easier to fix and not have conflicting information. And the list goes on and on and on. So Microsoft and all these big companies are literally investing in these small models. They're releasing them and letting people play with them and test them and use them for free on the condition that you give back what you learn. And then they're taking that learning and applying it to small and large models. That's going to bring in kind of an open source software component to the AI world in a lot of ways, Jay.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Maybe they'll make sense of the tax code. You can just ask real questions and get real answers. Probably not going to happen.
Oh, no, because even when you call the IRS, humans give you all different answers.
Yeah.
Although they could create a solid answer that's like, this is the approved answer for this question. Ask the question any way you like, and we'll convert it to our language that we understand, and then we'll feed you back the same answers. I mean, that's where they're going to start to get to, where hopefully you can start to get single source accurate information out of these things, too. I mean, that's, in my opinion, one of the real advantages of a computer, being able to say, look, I know you asked this 14 different ways, different people, but I can give you the same answer because I know what you're looking for and what you're answering, and I know the answer is accurate. So there's a lot to this, Jay. We've just scratched the surface of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. You got a story for us, Jay?
Yeah, absolutely. This one's not as positive. It's a little bit sad, actually. This is an FBI report. Yeah, and it's a marker on last year.
Is it as bad as all my data being hacked like a couple of times ago?
No, it's probably worse, actually, because it preys on the elderly. So we all know that you have these overseas scammers, and they're calling people up, having people ship FedEx cards and Google Play cards from, you know, their local pharmacy. They're buying them and they're getting scammed out of their money. But we didn't really realize how bad it has been until they put together this report. So anyway, this is for 2023, so just last year. Americans, and mostly elderly Americans, lost $3.4 billion to scams, according to an FBI report. Yeah.
That is sad. That's a lot of money, Jay.
It's a lot of money. And they're only getting worse. I mean, we're talking about AI all the time these days.
Say the number again.
$3.4 billion with a B.
$3.4 billion?
Yeah. Scammed out of people.
Oh, my.
Telephone scams.
So we're going to have to start teaching grandma or whatever, you know, to say, look, whenever anything comes your way, before you spend any money or before you sign up for anything or before you agree to anything, please let one of us younger folks just kind of understand what you're doing.
Yes.
To see if we can, you know, make sure that it's okay. We're not trying to babysit your grandma, but we are trying to keep you safe. And it's a crazy world out there, and things seem more and more and more legitimate. I mean, they've started to use AI in this voice generation to be like, you know, you think Sam, your grandson's calling, and
yeah,
it's not Sam at all. And
those are the latest ones.
Give Sam money, and you know, you don't, because it's not true. And Sam's like, what? I don't know anything about this. And I mean, that's what's happening, right?
Yeah. Always call, try to verify a second way. Don't trust calls out of the blue, and just do your best to, you know, keep those people and keep your loved ones, especially, you know, the elderly or the less tech savvy in your life, in the loop and protected, because they're losing a lot of money. And the sad part is, and we talked about this with ransomware, the more this happens, the more lucrative it is, the more it's just going to fund more and more and more of it. You're just going to see it constantly growing because it's such a moneymaker.
Well, and I think it's going to be just, I hate to say this in such a negative term or whatever, but I almost think it's just going to be open season on the naive. And what I mean by that is this
right now
so ubiquitous, so everywhere, that even young people are going to be falling for this stuff everywhere, Jay.
That's right. And it is. I don't mean to say that it's only. I just say, I mean predominantly. But, yeah, younger people fall for it. People of all ages get scammed by all these different methods that they have, whether it's the guy calling you saying it's Microsoft and he needs to log into your computer to fix whatever, or it's your son or your brother or whatever calling and saying he's been kidnapped and you got to send so much money, or been arrested and he's got to needs money to make bail. There's so many of them out there, you can't even keep up with it, and they're always building and thinking of new ones. So you just got to stay on your toes. You got to be careful and make sure you double check and try to verify.
You know, the article really focuses on those above 60. They don't really mention much about those below 60, but I'm telling you, the more the deep fakes become ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I think deep fakes are totally available and usable in almost perfect, where you can't tell the difference, at the high level. In other words, if you're doing big data, big computing, spending money, these things can be incredible. It's the reason you catch deep fakes now is because people don't spend much money on them, and therefore you're getting kind of the bottom of the barrel. In other words, you're getting leaked little bits of the tech's ability to do this. You know, you get what you pay for. It's kind of the old adage on this. But what I'm saying is, right now you can detect them, but eventually that supercomputing capability and that real AI knowledge is going to come to the table to the average consumer. Once it does, you're going to have people exploiting this left and right, to where it's going to be very hard to even know what's real, even for the very savvy, Jay.
That's right. The technology is only going to get better, and it's only going to get harder to distinguish it from what isn't. And we see it right now. I mean, you can, in 5 minutes, you can get a reasonable facsimile or kind of a cheap knockoff, but you spend a couple of hours and you gather some training data of somebody, whether they've been talking on a podcast or anywhere else. For example, this podcast, I mean, if somebody wanted to fake Sam or Jay, especially Sam, Sam's got billions of hours on the radio. If somebody wanted to fake Sam, it would be easy. It would be. I shouldn't say trivial, because the ones that are really good, they put some time and money into it, but anybody could do it. Anybody that was dedicated and had the time could make it happen.
All right. Well, to me, it's scary. They say there's a disproportionate Americans over 60 that are getting hit by this right now.
Very true.
But I'm telling you, the more capable these AI, you know, systems get, the more savvy and creative and auto-responsive they become, to where it can act like more of a human and respond and answer questions and even know details about you. Even if grandma's savvy and she's like, Sam, how old are you? You know, if Sam knows my age, or if that bot knows my age and it can respond, she can still be deceived.
That's right.
You know, the more details that are out there about you and the more they become, you know, lifelike, so to speak, the more deceived. I think that number will go from 60 to 30 and pretty soon it'll be everybody. They say average losses are about $30,000 a victim, Jay.
Yikes.
Whoa.
That is huge.
I mean, that's someone's life savings in many cases, Jay.
Absolutely. Or they borrowed it even, and they're, you know, getting hit on both sides.
Anyway, all I can tell you is it's a scary situation. I thought would bring that to your attention. People are wondering too, Jay. They say find great note-taking apps. So I want to know what your great note-taking apps are. The ones they mention here are Google Keep, I guess it's called, Google Keep,
yep.
Apple Notes, Notion, Bear, Microsoft OneNote. I've never used some of these. I don't know about Bear, and I don't know about a lot of those. Believe it or not, I use a text file a lot, Jay. I just literally type Windows R for the command line, type in Note, Notepad, hit Enter, type what I want, save it, and I know it's super text file based, and I know it's not even a very powerful editor. But for me, in a lot of notes, it works great. I use stars for things that I want to be able to search for and get back to, and I have my own kind of schema or whatever to make it work, but I just keep it super simple. And a lot of these note takers, you know, Evernote and this and that, and whatever that Microsoft OneNote seems to be on your computer. The problem is whenever I switch computers, I can never get my notes to the new computer. It's a hassle and a half.
I can not tell you how many times
I like simplicity.
OneNote on everything. I don't use OneNote at all.
Yeah.
But, you know,
there is a note taker that you use, right?
Yeah, there is. The one that I use the most is probably called Simple Note. That is a text-based note-taking app, but it's cross-platform, so you can have it on your desktop, you can have it on your phone, you can have it in multiple places. It all syncs up over the internet. But I still use Notepad in the computer a lot. So I have a shortcut key, just Control-Alt-N for new, like a new note. And I, like, someone calls, for example, on the phone. It's Control-Alt-N, and I'm taking notes in the Notepad. I use that a ton. For notes that I want to keep or share or do other things with, I use SimpleNote a lot. I used to use Apple Notes some, but I just haven't that much anymore. But, you know, I came over from long ago, actually back on Windows 3.1, and moved through 95, 98, and everything else. I was using an RTF document, which is rich text format, and just had a lot of notes in there, which was searchable in one big document. I kind of got away from that. Now I use a lot of things in Google Contacts. So if it's about a person, I'll put some notes in there or certain things. But a lot of things I also do, I use Bitwarden. You can have secure notes in that, and you can have credentials in there. You can put a lot of notes with credentials, which was also a lot of things that I do. But so personally, notes for me, SimpleNote. It's an app, SimpleNote.app, I believe is the domain. Let me see. I actually have it pulled up right here. Yeah, no, it's app.simplenote.com is what it is. So you go to app.simplenote.com, you just register for it. It's completely free. And I use that a lot, and you know, that's kind of my note solution. Maybe it's a little bit old school, but I don't think with using Bitwarden and Google Contacts for a lot of notes is probably more techie. But you know, a lot of people use Evernote, and you know, I'm surprised that wasn't in the list that you mentioned. There are a lot of
There's a lot of note taking options out there. That's for sure.
There's another one like Evernote. It's eluding me right now. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a big competitor kind of with Evernote. But Evernote has really kind of nerfed their system. So they had a really good free option for a while, and now their free option is not very good at all. It kind of reminds me of what LastPass did, where you could only have it on either a computer or a cell phone, but
yeah,
not both.
Yeah, it seems like whenever they get a hold of something, they ruin it, don't they, Jay?
Yeah, they do.
And I don't know why or how that is, but it seems like that's just
why.
The order of the day, man.
The why is they want to monetize it, and so they feel like if they cripple it enough but get enough people used to it or get a critical mass, then once they do and it's been known for really good, and you got to start that way, then they can hobble it and people will still just kind of go along to get along, or they'll just stay with it. In my case with LastPass, and I was already a paid version, so it didn't really affect me, but I couldn't get new users onto it because of the way they had crippled it or nerfed it, so to speak. And so Bitwarden, which is completely open source and free for personal use forever, is where I've told people. And that's a really good place to put some secure notes too, I think, or credit cards or whatever you want to store their credentials, primarily credentials.
Well, there you have it. I find that interesting. And I find note-taking a very simple thing. I find that a lot of times people want all these complicated apps that do all these things. And I find most often that, remember, the more complicated it is to use, the more detailed it is to enter, the less people tend to use it, Jay. And so I find that, for me, that's why, you know, I just use text files, and I use the name or the title of something that I want for the text files. Or I have a big text file with a bunch of different stuff in it, whether you do it that way or whether you attach it to notes based on contacts or based on.
But do you have a good way to search through your text file? Like, let's say you want to search for something, but you don't know what file it's in. Do you have a good way to search through all of your text files?
I do, only because I can search. I can use everything. Jay gave me this utility. It's really good. And I can search for the title of what I want and remember half of it. And 9 times out of 10, I can find it.
Yeah, that Everything app is a great app. It makes Windows. I was actually just read an article the other day, this week literally, of somebody who said, this was on howtogeek.com, and they were saying, I'm moving to Apple and I'm never going back to Windows. And one of their key points was how well Spotlight works on Apple to find stuff. And as I'm reading this, I'm just thinking, man, you should have tried everything before you switched, because everything is like Spotlight, but for a Windows computer.
Yes, but I think really everything is even more powerful than Spotlight is.
Yeah,
I
do too.
Spotlight, and it's good, but it's not as good as, I'm just telling you, it's shocking how good this everything is. It can find things that I'm like, I only knew about a tenth of what I was talking about. When it found it, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, now, I'm ready to go.
I spent 10, 15 minutes looking for something using Windows search and command line, and then I'll remember everything, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, and it will find it in seconds. And I'm just like, why didn't I start there?
All right. Is the note taker you use called SimpleNote.com, Jay?
Yes, SimpleNote.com, and then the app for it is app.SimpleNote.com, and then it just runs in a browser. You don't even install it or anything. It just runs from a browser.
And it runs on your phone. It runs on any device pretty seamlessly, too. And, you know, everybody used to, the rage was kind of like, let's make an app for this. Let's make an app for that. You got to have an app. You got to have an app. Now people are starting to say, no, we can write good enough stuff just in the cloud on a URL, and we don't need an app for it. And SimpleNote is a great example of that. Less annoying CRM, one of the greatest simple contact managers out there, is like that too. They don't have a phone app. They just have, you know, their portal, and you can connect to it, and it renders on anything and does a great job. I actually like that better than installing a bunch of apps that need to be updated, or shoot, I don't have the app, or whatever. You know, all you got to do is just, you know, put a little link on your desktop for it, and boom. And they're even starting to have where you go to the website and just click a button, and it will literally add the little app link to your desktop and then launch it in your browser, even on your phone. I don't know if you call it a desktop on your phone, but you know what I'm saying, your home screen or whatever.
Your workspace.
It just puts it right there for you, and it behaves and acts virtually just like an app that way, Jay.
Yeah, and less annoying CRM. I've recently had a chance to play with it and did some data import from a big list file, and I was really impressed with how well thought out it is and how simple it is. It kind of reminds you of that like Web 3.0 experience that places like Square and some of these newer websites where they've got it all well thought out. Cash App is another one, which I guess that's the same company. So Robinhood is one where the interface, the user interface, is very intuitive and very complex, but still simple to use. They've got a great help section with their videos.
I think it's great without having to install an app for everybody, though, because you don't have to worry about getting the latest version, or you don't have to worry about this or that. You don't got to go to the app store. You don't got to, and it's just in the portal in the cloud. And if they make any changes to it, next time you visit it, the changes are already there, and you don't know and you don't care, unless it's something that changes that frustrates you, or unless it's something just killer that you didn't know about. But I'm just saying that it's way more seamless this way, Jay.
The other interesting,
it can be tested as soon as it's rolled out instantly by a ton of people too.
Yeah.
And when you roll that out, if you have lots of users, and in 2 hours, it's already thoroughly tested almost.
That's right. And you don't have to get updates or go through the Apple store and have all these permissions and everything else. And in the case of less annoying CRM, I also like their pricing schedule. You know, it was very simple. I think it's $15 per user, but you could actually use one user account and have it logged in multiple areas if you needed to for some reason. But just clean product. You know, there's not an endorsement or anything else, because it's not sponsored, but it certainly is my endorsement. I just thought they did a really good job in the chance that I had to test it recently.
And you're talking about less annoying CRM?
Yes.
Yes, it is an incredible piece of software. One of the things that I really like about it, number one, it's a really powerful database, but it's very simple to use. They've got videos that you can just watch. They're between 5 and 8 minute videos. I don't know how many there is.
I think there's 12 of them.
You watch all the videos, and you really get caught up on how the system works and what it does and all that kind of stuff. And then you just, you know, launch the system. It's very intuitive, very easy to use. Best of all, though, they have a one-size-fits-all pricing. So it doesn't matter if you're a big company or a tiny company, from one user to 100 users. It's just $15 a month per user. No discounts for anybody, and no discounts for schools or educations or nonprofits or anything. Look, it's only $15. And they find that, man, it's just incredible how, with very few users, you can have a real powerful database with custom fields and everything. And it has, you know, the ability to search on all these different custom fields and find things. And it has basically businesses and contacts can be associated with businesses. It's very powerful. It's got a whole pipeline. It can manage your customer relations kind of experience, from, you know, people that are just interested to prospective clients to full-blown clients. You know, you can control that whole pipeline and follow up. It's got reminders and tasks. I mean, it's an amazing piece of software, and for $15 a month, there's no penalties, there's no startup costs. If you want to quit, there's no cost, except for you just turn it off, and so you don't even have a contract of any kind. You know what, if you need 5 people in it, 5 times 15, $75 a month, your 5 people have access to this, and they can access it on their phone. They can link it to their email, where it can literally BCC the CRM when you send something to somebody. So it adds it as a note to your contact. It is amazing. It's called Less Annoying CRM. Check it out. We don't get a penny to feed you that lead, but I'm telling you, it's a great one for small to medium business. I'll tell you that right now. For Jay Harrison and Sam Bush, we would like to thank you. We like to keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. NetworkProvidersInc.com for our company. NPITechGuys.com for this show's website. Thanks so much, and make it a great tech day, will you?